welcome to the JockX podcast, episode 49. My name is James O'Connor, your host, and this is where each week I invite on really incredible guests to share their stories, their tips, their tools, their strategies, the principles that they lived by that got them their results. And us as listeners can really take that away, apply it to our own games, and take ourselves to the next level. And that's what we've done for 49 episodes now, and I'm really excited to bring on today's guest, Barry Nicolau, and really share his story. He is a motivational speaker. He has just written a new book that we talk a lot about in this episode, and really covering the key topics, the key learnings that can help you out there across the globe, no matter where you are, to lift you up and empower your greatness. And that's what we do. And so I'm really excited for this one. And I just want to do a quick shout out to all the people who are telling their friends about these episodes and these amazing guests we have on. That really is important. It's free. It's for you to enjoy and really tell someone. If you love this, make sure you tell someone about it and just send them an email, send them a text, you know, tag them on Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is, and just let them know about these episodes and these particular guests. That's what we're here to do. Show notes for this episode with links to Barry's book and Barry's further information is going to be on eliteteamleadership.com.au/EP49. We'll have all links to Barry's stuff, some cool things in there also. So guys, without further ado, we're going to get stuck right into this episode 49 with Barry Nicolau. Welcome to the show, Barry.
Thank you, James.
Exciting, we managed to get this happening, and we have a few little technical difficulties, but we're away now. Absolutely. Now, Barry, I'd really love to get straight into it. I have a copy of your book, The 11 Master Secrets to Business Success and Personal Fulfillment. And I've had a quick browse over the weekend prior to this chat with you. I'm excited to chat with you about it. Why did you write it? Who's it for? And talk about some of the key learnings you expect readers to get from your new book.
Well, where do I start with that, James? Essentially, I wrote the book for anyone who wants to know the 11 main obstacles, and I keep calling it the crazy possible because, you know, most people that end up chasing our dreams are chasing something pretty out there and pretty crazy. So the 11 main obstacles and the 11 main blockages to achieving whatever they want. Who is the book for? The book is for everyone that's shifting from being interested in something to being committed to something. Because it's very important that a lot of people are interested in their dreams, but there are very few of us who become committed at actually reaching those destinations. And to the rest of us, it looks like they've had a little bit of luck or they've had a little bit of a push in life, whether it's an inheritance or something along those lines that have given them a leg up, when really they've just decided, most of them have just decided to commit to this ideology of actually achieving the impossible or crazy possible, which is, in my belief, it's pretty cool to be able to do that. And obviously, as well, the key learnings in it, James, would be overcoming any of the destructive strains that we have in us with regards to inherited thinking. Inherited thinking is a very big part of the book, which is obviously the way that our great-grandparents have thought, our grandparents have thought, and our parents. And a lot of it's good thinking practices, but we have to kind of weed out the fears and the negative self-talk and the doubtfulness and the unworthiness that comes through from our parents, and it usually comes through subconsciously. It doesn't come through consciously, and we inherently pick up these fears. And if you want to ask yourself the question, if you look at your parents and your loved ones and your cousins and your family, you end up sharing similar fears in life, and because of that, we end up taking a similar road to our family members. And it's actually quite peculiar that some people tend to break out of that apathy, break out of that frame of mind, and achieve something extraordinary. They're the people that actually end up separating good thinking practices from just mainstream thinking practices.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We talk a lot about on past guests as well, obviously the people you're surrounding yourself with, and obviously your family's sort of one of those ones that you sort of don't really have a choice, I guess, in a way, when you first come into this world, if you like, and you grow up, as you mentioned, with those, I guess you adopt their beliefs in a way. Once you realise that, hey, maybe some of these beliefs aren't serving me in a positive way and you need to sort of challenge those beliefs, what are some of the key tactics that you've seen are successful for individuals to apply to themselves and, you know, that change their narrative and become in a more positive frame?
Yeah, there's some really interesting areas, actually. And I mean, those beliefs, especially that have been kind of spawned upon us by certain family members and friends and colleagues and people that aren't kind of achieving what you want to achieve, I've looked at three little areas that we can get through. And a couple of them have to do with Murphy's Law, and we all know Murphy's Law quite well. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, them obviously going for their dreams and then obviously having a step back at that point and then you deciding to go on for whatever reason. And Murphy's Law for me is a lot of our friends and family have actually hit Murphy's Law and given for nothing in life, and that belief structure, it kind of encourages us to give up as well. But my wife and I, Lana, if you ever meet us, James, we're quite inspirational as far as how we want to actually live our lives. And, you know, for Murphy's Law, for example, we have the ultimate gratitude in life as a strategy to go against the places in life where roadblocks come up against us and we kind of want to give up. So obviously, Murphy's Law is one of them. The other area we've got to look at is that we haven't got a lot of time. And the realization that we have got limited time is a huge factor for me. You know, we've only got a certain amount of breath in our body, a certain amount of years left in our life, and I think it's our duty, almost our obligation, to make sure that when we do live our life and we come to the end of our life, we've got to actually look at it and go, well, have we run a good race, and have we done everything that we really wanted to do? And the problem is, we don't know when our time's up. I mean, touch wood, we want to die when we're 100 years old, but it might not happen that way. So then it's necessary for us to chase the crazy possible and chase exactly why we're here. And that's why I keep referring in the book, you've got to find your true purpose. You've got to find your true vision for what you want to do, because we don't know how much time we have left. And everyone has a special something that they're bringing to the world. And what's a damn shame is that when, you know, poets become mechanics and bricklayers end up running shoe shops and pilots do something else, and you think to yourself, guys, if you love something, if you love mathematics, then do that. If you want to be a pilot, then do that. Then find what it takes to get there, because you've got the skill, you've got the talent to do it, and you'll probably be naturally better than the people that are just trying to do it. You're actually naturally good at it. So you want to actually achieve it. I think you'll be better than most people to actually get there. But it's just, I think it comes down to, James, the lack of faith in ourselves to actually get where we want to be.
Yeah, and you just touched on a bit there. I'd love to go on a little bit further. First thing I'd love to, or actually want to mention, I love that you're talking about, you know, a poet becoming a bricklayer or whatever, and sort of you're missing, the world misses out on their gifts that they've been given and those type of things. And it just makes you think of all those incredible people in the past. And if they didn't take the challenging road, then we might have missed out on a lot of things. But I want to get straight into finding and recognizing what, as an individual, you're good at. Are you able to give me some key signs, I guess, that listeners out there can notice of themselves and go, I'm actually really good at this and I really enjoy it and passionate about it? How do you notice that?
You know what? Well, actually, the best way to go about it is to go from the other end. Immediately recognize what you don't like.
Yep.
And then rule those things out immediately. So, you know, if you don't like mathematics, if you don't like... And I know that might sound kind of old, Barry, you're not good at maths, you should do maths so you get better at it. But all I'm saying is focus on your strengths, right? So if you're not good at something, rule it out. Write the top 10 things you want to do, put it down on a piece of paper and rule out the bottom five, because you don't want to do those things, and concentrate on the top 3 to 4. And that's how you find what you love. Now, a lot of people go, well, I'd really love to do that, but that job doesn't exist yet. Or I really love to become this, but I don't know how to get into it. And as long as you've found that, whatever the destination is, your brain and your body and your mind will find a way to it. It's just you've got to get that destination in your mind. And the best way I do that, James, is I close my eyes, I meditate every morning, and I go, right, Barry, where do I want to be in, say, 6 or 12 months' time? I think 5-year plans are silly. I think 3-year plans are silly. I look at plans 3, 6, 9, and 12 months down the road because I know what I'm doing with my time. I don't know where I'm going to be in 2 years' time. So I look at it and go, right, and let's say in a year's time, where do I want to be? I want to be there. Okay, so how do I, my brain kind of thinks, okay, well, let's find out the how. How are we going to get there? And then, I mean, to put a contradiction on all that as well, is sometimes we're not going to know how it's going to happen for us. Most of us are so caught up involved, and I'm one of them. We're not going to know sometimes how the outcome will come. And sometimes it defies logic. So you might get that phone call in the middle of the night and then someone offers you an opportunity. You might get that Skype call and it's, oh, Barry, I've got this little project you might help me out with. Or I've got a talk, Barry, can you come and do a talk? You can't plan for those because obviously they're instances that come up that in a way defy the how. So as we get so caught up in how we're going to do what we do, we've got to put the right energy out there for it to get what we want to be, but we've got to also release the attachment to it. We can't sit there and strangle it and go, well, how, because that's what makes most people give up, James. I believe that most people give up because they can't see the how. And people that end up being successful go, well, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen, and I just can't tell you when.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know what I mean? I don't know if you understand.
I totally understand where you're coming from. I just want to touch on one thing in terms of weaknesses. You know, we're brought up and you're told again and again, you know, work on your weaknesses and build them up. Mm. What's your thoughts on that in terms of people, you know, say you want to start a business and your strength is maybe the communication side of things and maybe on the marketing side of things and yet you struggle with the paperwork maybe. What's your view on weaknesses and how you should deal with them?
Oh, I think employ people where their strengths are your weaknesses.
Yeah.
And surround yourself with people that are really good. If for example, bookwork, oh, you've touched on one of my weaknesses. if I'm not good at bookwork, I will employ someone that's what they love. They've found their true calling, opening up a tax file and going through it meticulously.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, that's fantastic. You found your calling. It just so happens that your calling is in with my calling because I need you. Then they would open up. And then obviously, then I would learn from them. But I know that my strengths lie with my strengths. So I have to continually maintain that my strengths remain strong. So if my strength, for example, is communicating, then I've got to be able to make sure that that strength remains strong. If I keep focusing on my weaknesses, I find what I do consistently is I pull away from what I'm good at and I try to learn something better. My brain says, I don't want to play there. I want to play where I can really have some fun. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But at the same time, I think to myself, let's really focus and hone in on what we're good at. Look at our weaknesses, try and find people there that can help us with that, and obviously learn from that as well. My accountant is consistently sitting me down and going, now, Barry, let's go through this because I'll need you to get it. And, you know, 4.5 hours later, I think I got it, but it's taken 4.5 hours to learn something that I should have learned in half an hour.
Yeah.
So I know that's where my strengths and my weaknesses lie, but it probably hasn't answered your question, James, but at the same time, I find that I want to focus on what I really want to do well because that's how I can benefit the world and that's how I can benefit my family and obviously our friends and what have you.
Yeah, and you hear a lot, I guess, in the online industry in particularly, obviously you've got to be the best in the world and it makes you think if you are focusing on something that you struggle with to begin with, the chances of you being the best in the world at that particular activity is highly unlikely because it is a challenge even on your strengths to be the best in the world at something and I guess the reason to be the best in the world is because you know businesses are open now to competition and so it is it is a good point to make. I want to go from your passion. So you found your passion, you know what you love, you know what you want to do, you know in years to come what you want to spend your hours doing. I want to talk about the commercial side of things, because people are sitting here now, they're probably in their 9-to-5 job or, you know, and don't have a huge amount of savings or anything like that. What's your advice on commercial? Because let's be honest, we have rent to pay, we have mortgages, we have bills to pay left, right, and center, commitments, kids maybe. So talk to me about commercial side of things and making your passion, you know, viable.
For sure, James. And you know what? Hey, can I just say, that's an awesome question, because I think that it actually applies to everyone, right?
Yep.
Because how do we keep life's wheels lubricated at the same time as pursue what we love?
Yep.
And just quickly, I'll give you a quick little story. We had our seminar event about 2 years ago in Homebush, and we had this lady. We had about 50 people in the room, and I was up on stage explaining a few of the concepts behind the book. And this lady stood up with a lot of anger in her soul. You could see she was very frustrated. And she stood up there and she said, Barry, she pointed at me in front of 50 people, and she says, what you're talking about is rubbish. And I'm thinking, okay, well, if you want to challenge me, maybe do so afterwards. But since you've raised it, let's have it out. So she's obviously had a lot of frustration, a lot of anger in her. And I said, oh, may I have your name, please? And she says, my name is Rosie. And I said, Rosie, tell me your story. Why are you so upset? And she says, my husband left me 3 weeks ago. I've got 4 kids. I've got 2 mortgages. And I've just taken my 3rd job.
Oh, wow.
She says, how do I be a violinist if that's my dream? How do I do that? How on earth can I do that? And I said, Rosie, I actually had a whiteboard behind me with a marker. And I said, Rosie, can I ask what time you get up in the morning? And she says, I get up at 6 a.m. And I said, from now on, you're getting up at 5. And she looked at me astonished, as if to say, well, Barry, how can you even suggest I get up at 5 a.m.? And what we did, James, we worked out on the board a quick little bit of maths. And we worked out that an hour a day, 7 days a week, equals to 365 hours a year. And she agreed with that. It's 365 days a year, it's an hour a day, right?
Yep.
And when we divide 365 hours divided by a 7-day week, you know, we get 6 weeks worth of 8-hour days.
Yep.
6 weeks. So we sat in the crowd and I said, Rosie, I said, you now have 58 weeks a year and the rest of us have 52. And there was a bit of a standing ovation. There were a few people clapping in the room. And it wasn't about that. And it wasn't to impress anyone in the room. It's to impress upon Rosie that if she really wants to become a violinist, she has to spend the time to do it. So again, it's coming back to whether we're interested in something or whether we're committed to something. To say that we want to become a violinist in the next 20 or 30 years and telling our friends that's what we want to do, that's one thing. But actually getting up at 5 a.m. and making a dream come true, that's something very, very different. And they're the people that I look up and admire to, because you think, well, they're putting the work. Now, the other thing is, James, when I was writing this book, I was up at 5 a.m. every morning for the past 2 years. Now, I know it's only a little 100-page read, but I wanted the content to be quite potent in the book, because I want people to read it over a weekend and then get something out of it and apply the strategies immediately. That's what's great about having a nice quick read. And I've always said to my wife, I want to write a book, I want to write a book, I want to write a book. And then she said to me one day, well, why don't you write it? And I said, well, I don't have the time. I'm busy. I'm doing this. We're going out with family and friends, and we've got commitments, and we're going to start projects. And there's But Barry, if you really want to do it, you'll find the time. And she was right. So I got up at 5. It was dark. My whole street, all the lights were off in the street. So I was toiling away with a little lamp on, typing on my computer, because I believe in the concept. So I guess, how do you do it? How do you keep life's wheels lubricated? Well, you can do it. It's just that you've got to sacrifice a barbecue. You've got to sacrifice sleep. You've got to sacrifice a meal time. You've got to sacrifice something to get you something further. And a lot of people don't want to sacrifice those things, because we end up being in a society where we need our rest and play because we work so hard. So you think to yourself, well, if you want something over and above, you've got to just go that extra mile and sacrifice something. Some people would rather have a 2-hour lunch. Some people would rather, as I said, attend a barbecue. But I find that if you can sacrifice a few of those leisure things, then you can actually put that time into something that you really love for a much larger cause.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
what's your feeling?
No, yeah. I really like that. I think it's really important. I think, you see so much out there nowadays regarding, you know, gaining success in a short period of time too. I like how you sort of mentioned putting the work in and doing it over a long, sustained period of time, because let's be honest, really great results don't happen in 3 months or 6 months or 12 months. You know, it does take time to get to get to world class, which...
Only bad things happen quickly.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think if people can take a sort of longer view with their plans, I think a lot of goals and dreams will be realised a lot more. I want to touch back on in time as well. It's something you mentioned earlier regarding we're not here for that long. I think it's a really important concept, and I think about it constantly a lot. I'm 28 myself, but I think about the end game and the fact that you might make 80, 90, 100 if you're lucky. In terms of what you're actually going to do here. Talk to me more about your thoughts on time, the need to pursue what you really want to do. Because like you said, it's not guaranteed that, for instance, myself, to make 30. That's not guaranteed at all.
No, it's not. That's a scary thing, isn't it? And I keep using the analogy, and there's a few beautiful affirmations out there on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, and they keep referring to the 86,400 second rule, which is essentially how many seconds there are in a day, right?
Yep.
So you think to yourself, a lot of people, if you look at it, James, and you put, say, for example, $86,400 in your bank account, a lot of people will be quite specific on how they spend that money because they want it to go to the right place. You wouldn't just throw it out your front door with $100 bills and go, here you go, neighbors, here you go, everyone, here's the money. But that's exactly what we do with our time.
Yeah.
We turn around and we just kind of willy-nilly it out the door and we just go, oh, whatever, we've got plenty. And because our future happens one day at a time, we think we've got millions of days in front of us when we don't. We don't have 500 years to live. We're lucky if we have 80.
Yep.
And that's only 80 Christmases. That's only 80 birthdays. That's, you know what I mean? It's not a lot. And because it comes so slowly, people go, I'll do that one day. One day never happens unless you commit, because you'll become more comfortable in saying one day, and you'll never actually, oh, well, I've been saying it for so long now, I can't be bothered starting now, because, you know, I've been saying it for 20 years. So unless you make a firm commitment to go, I don't know how much time I've got left, and I'm not saying that from a horrible standpoint, I'm saying that let's start to use our resources a little bit more smartly, and the only resource we have, despite what everyone says, is time. Money will come and money will go, and success will come and success will go, and family members will be born and family members will die. The only thing we have is time. So we're here for an unknown amount. So then isn't it our responsibility to find what we love in the unknown amount of time we've got and pursue that with all of our belief, all of our tenacity, all of our love and energy? So one day when someone's standing up there, hopefully doing a beautiful eulogy, they'll say that, Jesus, he died, but wow, did he pursue what he loved? And I think all too often the opposite happens. I think some people end up dying on their deathbed, and they end up dying empty. You know, and they have all these dreams and all these beautiful moments that they wanted to have in their lives. They never got around to doing because they never made a firm commitment to do it.
Yep.
So I guess if anyone's listening to this right now, and yourself and myself too, James, make the firm date to start, and that day is today. So make the commitment to start, to do what you want to do, and the how will come to you. If you can't see the entire how, just trust that the next step will reveal itself in due course. When it's ready, it'll come to you. And then when that step comes to you, then you can take the next small step, and it might be a small risk. But if the small risk is indicated, take it, because it's there to learn and it's there to help us grow. If it doesn't work out, it's a learning curve. If you win, you try to repeat it. So we never really, really lose at all. If when we win, we win. When we lose, we learn. So why are we so afraid of taking little tiny risks in life when life is the ultimate risk, because we don't live forever? So I guess there's that passion in me that wants to make sure that whoever reads the book and whoever gets out there and wants to live their true purpose, that they get out there and actually do it and believe in themselves. And when tough times come, just keep going, because that's the time where life will ask you, well, how bad do you want this, Barry? How bad do you want this, James? How bad do you want it? Because it's not for everybody. And I think at the end of the day, that's where most of us should be at.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, and we think about those tough times. Like anyone, it's easy to do the easy times. So anyone can do that. So once you get through that and into the hard times, that's where really the game is at. I'd like, a good exercise for listeners too, actually speaking of your eulogy, is to actually spend the time, maybe spend an hour or half an hour, and just writing down what you ideally would like people to say about you when you're, you've moved on from this world. And I think it's a cool exercise. One I've done myself, and I definitely recommend if you're out there listening, have a crack at that one and see what you come up with. And it does give you a lot of direction. I sort of want to talk about just some bullet points here in terms of biggest obstacles you see people need to overcome to achieve their dreams. Obviously, you mentioned self-belief. What are a couple sort of other key obstacles people seem to really stumble at?
Yeah. You know what people should be looking at? Because, you know, tough times are going to come regardless of who you are, right? So if you know that from the get-go, you can put strategies in place. The problem with most of us is we're completely surprised when tough times come because we think it's all going to be smooth sailing when it's definitely not, right?
Yeah.
So one of my little strategies that I put forward, James, is I always find a place of inspiration. And for me, my journey on this path as far as inspiring people to do what they love through the book and the upcoming seminars and talks is... It's quite a peculiar story, so some of your listeners might agree or might not, but for me, it rings very true. I was quite early for an appointment one day in Sydney, and my customer called me up and said, Barry, I'm running a little bit late. Can you make the appointment an hour later? So I said, right, I've got an hour to kill. What do I do here? And my car, and I can't explain how or why it happened, James, my car steered itself inside this most beautiful graveyard in Macquarie Park in Sydney. It's an absolutely beautiful place to visit. So I pulled my car over in the middle of this graveyard, manicured gardens everywhere with, you know, thousands of tombstones around me. And nothing brings a bit of clarity to your life than the fact that you're not going to live very long. So as I was walking along these grave tombs, I didn't know anyone that was buried there. I was just reading each tomb. And obviously the two words on every grave were, you know, born and died and then the date. And I just kind of sat there. I leant against my car and I closed my eyes for it would have been about 30 seconds. And I heard three words as if all these graves kind of, all these people that were buried there all kind of united in one voice. And they all said three words to me as if they could just communicate one thing. And those three words, and it still gives me goosebumps to remember this for me today, those three words were, live your life. And I'm like, live your life? What on earth does that mean? I am living my life. I mean, what a silly thing to kind of communicate. If you want to communicate, give me the lotto numbers. don't communicate, live your life. And as I kind of drove away, I was a little bit confused. I was a little bit inspired, but, you know, live your life, what does it mean? That night I went to sleep, right? And I had these three words in my mind as I was going to sleep, and the word your was capitalized, as if to say, live your life. Go and live what your true purpose is. Go and live that. And I kind of woke up at 3 in the morning in a bit of a cold sweat, and I'm like, oh, my God, I get it. I'm meant to live my life. Right, what am I good at? Oh, I love talking to people. I can communicate with people quite easily. I'm great with strangers. I can get them to open up quite quickly. And I, from that, I can really push my agenda of, you know, getting them to live their life and their passion. And that's what I'm good at. So how can I get into this? And obviously then, you know, the book came about, the 5 a.m. getting up in the morning and started writing this book. So I guess for me, that was one of my moments of inspiration. And when you say obstacles for people to kind of overcome, you can't be bombarded with Murphy's Law and not have a place of inspiration, because that's your bounce back. So you've got to have that reset button. And for me, whenever I drive into that particular graveyard, it reminds me of the beginning of the journey. So what I say for people out there, you've got to have a place of inspiration. Now, a lot of people have a mental place of inspiration. They remember someone or something or an event that brings them a lot of inspiration. But I honestly recommend to have a physical place of inspiration, somewhere that you can actually drive to, fly to, walk to, take a stroll to, and close your eyes. And you know, when you're in that place, it could be a beach, it could be a rainforest, it could be somewhere where you're alone with your thoughts. When you're in that place, start being truly grateful for what you have. And really start to count your blessings. And this is what I say to people, don't count sheep if you're trying to get to sleep. Count your blessings, right? Because there's probably more blessings we have than sheep in the world. So you think to yourself, right, let's turn around and really count our blessings. And the realization, again, as we touched on before, is when you find your place of inspiration, then you realize that time is indeed limited and there's the unknown factor of time. So that's the other obstacle people need to overcome, is what we touched on previously. And I know I keep going back to Murphy's Law, but Murphy's Law is very, very, very important, because if you recognize that it happens to everyone, everyone has an instance of Murphy's Law that comes into their life, you know, obviously whatever can go wrong will go wrong, then we can have a strategy that when we recognize Murphy knocking on our front door, we can have a strategy in place.
Yeah.
But with most of us, we get disheartened and give up. So what I try to do is I go, right, something's happened to you, Barry. It's not great. Someone's made you upset. You've lost money. You've lost time. You're embarrassed. You're afraid of doing something in case you fail. I look at it like, right, what's the worst that can happen here? And how will this look like in 3 years' time or in 2 years' time? Will I laugh at it or will I get upset by it? And most of the time, James, I end up laughing at it and go, how stupid was I to make such a big deal out of something so small?
Mm.
So I guess, for me, that are the three obstacles. So look at Murphy's Law, get a strategy happening for it, realize that you've got not much time or you don't know how much time you've got. And that's not to scare people. That's just to turn around and go, we don't know.
Mm.
And obviously finding that place of inspiration that you can just keep bouncing back to, and making sure that it's a physical place as well as a mental place to because unfortunately, the society that we live in, it almost promotes a fear-based programming thought in our minds. And you can't live in a fear-based society and be positive unless you have a place of inspiration.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just turn the news and you'll be frightful forever, I guess.
hopefully not too frightful.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, interesting. I'm a bit of a believer in not watching the news too much. But on the flip side of that...
Yeah.
On the flip side of that, three keys that made you get to where you are, Barry. What are three things that you did well that got you to your point and to the point where you've written a book and you're discussing this on a daily basis with a wide audience?
Yeah, you know, one of the first things we've got to do, James, and that's all of us, anyone listening, and obviously the two of us as well, you've got to believe that it's possible. And I'm not talking about, and I'm not, you're obviously, James, I don't know if you know the law of attraction and how it works. I'm a big believer of how vibrational effort ties in with action effort. But we've got to believe that it was, that our future is possible. So that's the first thing that I do as far as wanting to become, and successful is a quite subjective word. For me, it's a journey. So I don't know if I'll ever get to that level where, oh, I'm hugely successful. But what I know is that I'm really loving the journey so far. And if I can touch people along the way, that gives me my sense of fulfillment and gives them their direction as well. So I guess believing that it's possible, and that comes down to worthiness, right? So you've got to know that you're worthy of any success that you are, that you have today, and any success that will come your way, you are absolutely worthy of it. So the other thing, the other belief that I have about success is that we have to be able to learn from failures, because a lot of people try to learn from success. Success is the worst teacher in the world because it makes it look easy when it's not. So I look at where people have fallen down and I go, right, how did they stuff up? Why did they stuff up? Was it the wrong attitude? Was it market conditions? Was it the money? Was it the fear of them taking the next step which could have led them to the success? Where did they fail? And I try to apply that in my life. And I guess the last little bit for me is I've got a little story of my first talking event. If you've got time, James, I can go quickly through.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just quickly, I my first speaking event in Homebush was about 2.5 years ago now. It was 150 seats in the room. I was promised 170 people, and I was so pumped. I was excited. I'm like, wow, 170 people. I'm going to inspire them all. This is going to be fantastic. So here I come, rocking up right before my seminar time slot. and there was 150 seats, and guess how many people were in the crowd?
Oh, I'm not sure.
One. He was a lovely Chinese guy, and he was eating his tub of yogurt in the middle of the sea of seats. And I remember the flavor of the yogurt. It was, I think it was strawberry mango or something. Anyway, so I'm like, oh my God, this must be a mistake. And to me, it was Murphy's Law slapping me in the face and saying, well, how bad do you want me, Barry?
Yeah.
So I looked at him. I looked at the one Chinese man. He looked at me. He kind of smiled, a little half smile. I smiled at him, and I felt probably about 20 negative emotions all in the space of a minute.
Yep.
I felt angry. I felt loathsome. I felt depressed. I felt frustrated. I felt everyone else had full seminars, and here I am with one guy. So I thought to myself, after all that, a little wave of clarity hit me, and I thought, Barry, if you can convince Yogurt Man to possibly buy the yogurt company, I would have touched one soul. And I guess what this game's all about is about touching one soul, whether you're in the room of 5,000 people, which is my dream, or whether I'm in the room with one. And I started speaking to Yogurt Man, and he kind of put his yogurt down and just started listening. James, an hour later, after I finished my talk, there were 120 people in the room.
Are you kidding?
And I could have easily walked away with the one, and he would have not cared, he would have not worried. I would have walked away and kind of given up and said, you know what, this is not for me. I tried it. There was one guy in the room, you know, and in 20 years' time, I'll be telling the story about how I tried to do something and it didn't work out because there was only one person showing up. So I thought, right. I started talking to him, 120 people in the room, and I think I got about 10 people later who wanted to have personal coaching sessions with me and to kind of evolve what they want to do with their lives. Now, I would have never touched the 10 if I didn't talk to the one. And I guess that comes down to having the faith in your ability and in what you really want to do. Because I keep using the analogy, James, that you know when you're driving your car at night and you've got your lights on, you don't see the whole highway ahead. All you see is the first 10 meters of where your lights are shining. Yep. That's how it is with life. You don't see the whole highway. You only see the next 10 meters. So you think, right, if I keep driving at 80 kilometers per hour, I'm eventually going to see the next 10 meters and the next 10 meters and the next 10 meters. And that's what life's about. It's not about seeing the whole highway and going, well, I can't see it, so therefore I can't drive it, so therefore I can't do it. It's about going, all I need to see is the 10. That for me, all I needed to see was the one. And he was my inspiration. And I honestly believe, thinking back, he was my angel that was sitting there to kind of encourage me not to give up, but at the same time, not let me walk away and kind of just persist, Barry. Just sit there and try and convince this guy to buy the yoga car. And I'm pretty sure he actually left halfway through the seminar. Hopefully not because I wasn't that great, but because he did his job.
Yeah.
He brought the 120 possibly that I didn't see.
Yeah. No, I love that story. That's an impressive sort of story. And I think as a speaker, we've probably all had those moments where you've gone, oh no, this could be going a bit south, but sounds like you turned it around.
Exactly. So hopefully it wasn't a too boring story, but for me, I always think about it and I think to myself, anyone that comes to me, James, that says, oh, Barry, I tried and I failed, I keep saying, well, maybe you've just got to kind of use your steering wheel and realize that you're up against a roundabout. You're not up against a cul-de-sac. Just steer your wheel around the roundabout, and that's what steering wheels are for, right? We've all got them.
Yeah.
So you've got to steer your wheel around the roundabout and just keep going straight, and you'll eventually arrive where you want to be. Most people are viewing roundabouts as cul-de-sacs, and they kind of have to turn their car around and go back. And life's not that. Life's actually putting these obstacles in front of us to find out how bad we want something. And then, James, as you would know with your career and how passionate you are, at the end of the day, it's who you end up becoming because of all the roundabouts.
Mm.
Not so much the end destination of you being successful and of me being successful or whoever out there being successful. It's about the battle scars that we've got along the way that we've earned our stripes to get there. And we look up to these people and we think, wow, you know, how did you guys do it? Well, it's going through 1,000 roundabouts and not giving up and making sure that we can steer our wheel around these roundabouts, and there's no such thing as a cul-de-sac. So at the end of the day, that's my philosophy. I mean, everyone's different, but at the end of the day, that's how I get through my my little issues.
Well, the interesting thing is too, the challenges you face, the big challenges that really test you right out, they sort of turn out to be the moments that you remember most and the moments you were sort of most proud of in future that you overcame. And
spot on.
And they're the stories when you're sitting in your retirement home, they're the ones you're going to recall because, you know, that's where you really you found yourself, you really tested what you were made of and overcome something really significant. So I think, you know, audience listening, the tough moments are the ones you're going to remember a lot of the time. I'd like to talk about your daily habits and rituals. I'm always a big fan of people and creating great habits throughout their day on a daily basis. What are some of the key things you do? Like, what's your morning routine like, and anything that you do that are, you know, like a non-negotiable for you each day? You mentioned you meditate. Is there anything else?
Every morning. Yep.
Yeah. So what else is sort of the thing, just so listeners can get an idea?
I tend to go for a 5:30 a.m. run. It's only a short run. It's only about 3 kilometres.
Yep.
But I find that at first thing in the morning, I put my gym clothes on and I'm running in the dark, usually with a bit of motivational music in my ears, because the way I look at it, James, is the first thing you do when you get up in the morning usually sets the spirit of your day. So if you get up and kind of, you know, first thing you do is put on your clothes, go to the coffee shop and have a coffee. That's going to create a certain ritual and a certain practice for you every day. And eventually that'll come down to your body and your mind and everything kind of, you know, leads in from how you start your day. But for me, for my run in the morning, it clears my head. I give my body the exercise that it needs to hopefully have a long life, because we don't know how long we're going to have. So I think to myself, well, let's at least keep it healthy, for if we do go the distance, we've got a half-healthy body to take us there. So that's what I do every morning at 5:30. I usually get back home at around 6:30 for my meditation. And then what I do at night, I do the same run at night at 9:30 at night. And I know that sounds kind of weird, because a lot of people tend to wind down at night. But I find that as soon as I have my dinner, I'd like to go out there and kind of have a bit of an energy expelling exercise to just get the body pumping again. And then obviously we come home and have our showers and go to bed and whatever else our night kind of consists of. So at the end of the day, I try to go for 2 runs a day. I would probably say 90% of the time I go for 2. Sometimes if I have a late night or if there's a lot of work on, I might get my nightly run, but the morning one is my most important run. Meditation is also very, very important, because it brings you back to a place of understanding that we should be extremely grateful for what we've got. Yeah. And that's what I do when I meditate. So you think of all the beautiful things, James, that you and I and all of our listeners have in our life right now. And it's not just physical things. It's not just the car and the house and a holiday and money in the bank and nice clothes and the holiday. It's not about that. It's about simple stuff. 10 fingers and 10 toes. It's about breathing without needing an apparatus. It's about not needing a wheelchair. It's about having healthy skin. It's about being able that, you know, you can turn around and say, my intestines are all working like they're meant to be working. My nails are growing. And, you know, my eyes are letting me see the beautifulness of the world, and really simple things that we take for granted every day, right? And then once you thank, you know, for your body and your mind and your spirit and whatever your beliefs are as far as what sort of life you want to live, I tend to go outwards from there. So then I start to get the bigger stuff, and I'm like, wow, thank you for having enough income streams to come in, which allows me to pursue what I love. Thank you for having a supportive partner who, if I didn't have a supportive partner, none of this would be possible, because I'd be fighting with her, I'd be fighting with myself, and I'd be fighting to get my dreams realized. So I think, okay, now let's go even bigger than that. Thank you for the family around us that are loving us and that really understand us. Thank you for also the people that don't believe in us, because it lets you know who your true and great believers and supporters are. Because a lot of people think, what Lana and I had tended to do, James, at the beginning when we started going on this path, is a lot of people would look at us quite strangely, and they would think, well, Barry, why do you have to reach for that for? I mean, aren't you happy you've got what you've got? What, I mean, you've got so much more. Why do you have to reach for that? And it's driving me that I want something more out of life. Now, that drive might not be in them, but it's in me. So I look at it and I think, right, that's what's important to me. So I'm gonna strive for that. And if you're not aligned with that mission, that's okay. But we're gonna gravitate towards people, mentors, colleagues that can encourage us to take small risks, because we can't grow unless we take small risks. And everyone wants to be happy, everyone wants to be at the end destination, but they don't realize the 3 to 4 layers in getting there. So if you, I think it was Les Brown, a huge motivational speaker in the States. I'm not sure if you've heard of him.
Yeah, I have. Yes.
I mean, he's in my ears at 5:30 in the morning, because Les is just, this story that he has and the way he can communicate it is amazing. I think he said, if you cannot learn, you cannot grow. If you cannot grow, you cannot become your best. If you cannot become your best, you cannot be happy. If you cannot be happy, then what else is there?
Yeah.
So unless people want to jump 3 steps and get to the happy stage. And the other thing is, people don't define happiness. They all say they want to be happy. I say to the younger, I say, I just want to be happy. Well, how do you define it? Measure it. How do you know when you'll get it? How will you know when it's in front of you? Because if you just keep saying, I want to be happy, without putting something in there to actually say, this is when I'll know I'll be happy. If, for example, if you're focused around money, and you want $1 million annual income, and you say, right, when I earn my $1 million a year, that's when I'll be happy. Then if that's your goal, that's how you'll know where you'll be happy. And when you reach that, you might be happy there, or you might set a new goal for yourself. But we have to be able to measure what will keep us happy. And the only way to do that is to grow, to risk, and to become your best. And unfortunately, why I think there's so much scope for what you do, James, and what I'm trying to do, is that there's a lot of people that end up not chasing that happiness and not realizing that it all comes with a degree of risk. And because we don't live forever, it's in our face anyway. Life is the ultimate risk. So you think to yourself, well, if we're in the ultimate risk and we're not going to live forever, how about we stop being spectators, and how about we start being players on the field? And how about we learn and we fight for our territory and fight for what we want in our life, and to learn the game, and to get beaten down and to get back up and to learn from that, rather than pointing at the players from the spectator stand and saying, you should have thrown the ball to him because then you would have scored a try.
Yeah.
So let's get on the field and realise what it actually takes to score that try, rather than being in the spectator stand and actually, you know, with bated breath or with conviction, and say you should have done that and you would have been successful. So that's my take on that.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
No, I love that. That's really, really good. I've got some sort of quick fire questions for you here, Barry, if you don't mind, if you've got a bit more of your time. You think of a successful person, who do you think of and why?
Do you know, are you a fan of Star Trek?
I haven't watched it, unfortunately.
All right, well, there's your whole series, and some people might know it, the Next Generation series, which was probably in the early 90s, late 80s. This is showing my age right now. But there's an actor that plays one of the captains of one of the starships called Patrick Stewart. You probably know him from X-Men.
Yep.
In the wheelchair. So Patrick Stewart was the captain of the Starship Enterprise. Anyway, so he has a dilemma in one of his episodes where one of his lieutenants loses heart in his job. And he has a line in that. And I've always admired the line, and I've remembered it for the rest of my life. And his line in it, when he's talking to his officer, was, you can make no mistakes and still lose. He says, that is not weakness. That is life. And I think most of us look at mistakes as weaknesses when they're not. It's just teaching us to kind of, you know, get up back on the horse and keep riding. So he's one of my, I don't know the man, I'd love to meet him one day. I pray that I do, I bump into him somewhere. But he's one of my mentors. I've got a colleague of mine who owns a very successful shoe shop in Bondi, in Sydney. And he gave me a bit of advice about 2 years ago. And he said, Barry, he said, if your aim is true, he said, and your trajectory is true, he said, you'll pass through any obstacles or barriers and you'll get to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And he's another one for me that's kind of been a mentor. So it's not so much for me, James, as big famous people apart from Patrick Stewart. So for me, it's quite personal, that have made people that have encouraged me in my inner circle that have helped me grow. And the last one would be my stepfather, who turned around to me when I was 10 years old, and he gave me some very sound advice about money. And he said to me, Barry, he said, you pay your debts and you be respected. And I've always looked at that as a cornerstone to how you should operate with people, with your own finances, and at the same time, obviously take the risks to grow in life, which includes money and time, but always pay your dues, because, you know, someone's obviously mentioned money, being the bank or someone, or you've got to pay your debts and be respected. And I've always believed that. So for me, they're the three main mentors in my life that I've had.
Love it. Advice for your 20-year-old self?
Can we skip that one? yeah, no worries. If I was talking to 20-year-old Barry, I'd probably say to him to be brave.
Yep.
To break the rules. Not the law, but break the rules. Follow your own intuition. And don't so much pander to the immediate needs of a somewhat status quo-driven crowd. And we live in a society that has us kind of, and I use the analogy lightly, it kind of has us in a bit of a society-driven cage. And I look at it as creativity needs to break out of that cage and be something different. So if I had to give some advice to my 20-year-old self, it would be, don't be afraid to break out of the cage. Go out there and don't look for approval from anyone else. At the beginning, I used to really look for people to approve my decisions, because then it guided me that I was on the right path, right? But then when you get older, you start to realize that you don't need that approval. All you have to do is just come forth and be the creative light that you were meant to be. Whatever that is, be that creative light. That's our purpose while we're here, to be that creative light, right? Obviously to have our families and to have our good times and go through our bad times. But ultimately, we are all individual and we're all creative. And I think to myself, well, whatever you're creative at, whatever you love to do, do that and make sure that you push that with all of your love and all of your faith and all of your tenacity to actually get where you want to be. So that's what I would probably be talking about. Probably talking to myself. Not that I would listen at 20 years old, because it was all about fast cars and fast money.
No, that's a good answer overall. Books, yeah. Books and documentaries you might recommend for listeners to get a hold of, other than yours, of course.
Oh, no, mine is a lot better than mine. there's three books I would definitely recommend to readers. And I've got given this one about 2 years ago. It's a little book called The Art of Thinking Clearly. I don't know if you've heard of it. By a gentleman called Rolf Dobelli.
Yeah,
he really goes through great scenarios about reading between the lines. So not just looking at life or at situations on face value. So it's almost like, James, receiving a contract for sale, or it's like receiving something where you can read it and it makes sense to you logically, but you also have to go beneath the words and look at the theme of what's actually being said. So that's a great, fantastic book for that. One that I find that I've really got a lot of wisdom from is one called The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. Don't know if you know it.
Yeah, classic.
Classic, right? So follow your heart's intuition, which is really what we all should be doing. A lot of wisdom in that book. And hopefully people that read it can gain that. I've read that book four times. I just think it's sensational. And I keep getting surprised. I go to the next chapter and I keep forgetting what I've read, and I'll have to reread it and go, oh, how true is that? And there's another really good little book that I've got in front of me right now, and it's by a doctor called Gordon Livingston, and it's called Too Soon Old, Too Late Smart. And he's got 30 True Things You Need to Know Now. And that's a sensational book about we are what we think and we are what we do every day. So at the end of the day, you know, I mean, Earl Nightingale, I don't know, you've probably heard of Earl Nightingale, or Troubles, James,
yep.
In the 50s. He coined the phrase, a man becomes what he thinks about most. And, you know, the huge personal development industry kind of stemmed from that time and before Earl. But the great thing about Earl Nightingale is he kind of coined it down to a few different mindsets in life. And if you think a certain way, if you turn up to life thinking negative most days, well, then you'll find supporting evidence and supporting documents and supporting friends to back up your decision. Whereas if you find that you're kind of a positive person, then you'll also find that evidence to prove that life is pretty cool. So what we look at in life is everyone says, well, live in reality, Barry. You know, you're not living in reality. But what they fail to realize is that there's 7 billion versions of reality. Everyone that's on the earth has their own version of reality. But then what society tends to try to do is all put it into one version, which is it's quite hard to do because a lot of us are individuals, or all of us are individuals. So then how do you kind of put all these square blocks in round holes, right? So you think to yourself, right, so if there's a purpose to us being here, it has to be along the lines of basically exploring that creative talent that we've got in us. And in Earl's words, and in Gordon Livingston's words, you've got to go out there and really discover what you love and realize that what we do every day, daily practices, end up becoming who we are in the future. So if you want to become something, whether it's a poet, you've got to look at your natural abilities and focus on poetry and realize what it takes to become a great poet and focus on that every day. And eventually you'll get to that level where you're in the top 5% of the world. But if you don't focus on it today, it's very hard to kind of get to that sort of level if you don't put daily rituals in place to get to that level.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Any documentaries you might recommend people have a look at as well?
Oh, no. I'm a fan of nature, so I'm a big David Attenborough fan.
Yeah.
Because that lets us know that we're not alone in the world, despite the fact of our, you know, being on top of the food chain and the rest of it. But I look at it and I think we can learn so much from nature, we can learn so much from animals, not just how they live, but the caring aspect that family units have for one another. And the fact that, you know, most animals, you know, let their young out at a very young age to go and explore the world. And those young, some of them will survive, some of them won't survive. But they're having their shot at life, which is kind of a lot braver than what a lot of humans tend to do, where we try to protect our children from the horrors and the mistakes and the negativity of life, when we need those lessons to be stronger. And we're not going to be stronger, or our kids won't be stronger, if we keep protecting them from, you know, our negative experiences. So you think to yourself, right, maybe they've got to fall down, maybe they've got to skin their knees a few times to realise that they've got to get back up and put a band-aid on their knees and keep walking.
Yeah.
And I think it's that resilience that animals tend to have, and that human beings, we tend to protect and oh, we've had a horrible experience there, therefore we don't want our kids to have that experience. And just quickly, we've got friends of ours, and I mean, this guy is an Italian guy. He came to Australia 30 years ago, self-made millionaire, James, really nice man. But, you know, he's got 2 boys, and the 2 boys aren't hungry for life, and it kills the father that the kids don't have that hunger that he had when he was younger. And I was saying to him the other day, I said, Eddie, I said, listen, you shouldn't be so concerned about what you leave for your kids. You should be concerned about what you leave in your kids, rather than just for. And I think it's a very important distinction to make, because we're all doing it for the kids. We're all doing it for the next generation, right? But at the same time, we've got to look at it and think, well, okay, we're doing it for them, but are we depriving them of something that they have to learn by doing everything for them? So obviously we want to pay down debt, and we want to live our lives, and we want to leave something for the kids. But at the same time, I'm envious of the parents that can turn around and, you know, the very successful, famous people in the world that say, you know what? I mean, I think it was Mel Gibson's kids that were working at McDonald's, and like, they've got to learn how to earn money, because that's how they can manage money, which means that's how they can go out and become successes in life. And hey, I'm here anyway, so they've got the backing, but I'm not going to give them that backing on a silver platter.
Yeah.
So I think there's something really admirable about that, because the kids turn around and learn the value, not just of earn money, but at the same time of what it takes to kind of go through a few instances of Murphy's Law and finding their little inspirational place, and not make it just about the dollars. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely onto something there for sure. Final question. If I could give you a banner and you could put it anywhere in the world, where would it be, and what would you have on it to say?
I'd put it on top of I put it on top of Sydney Tower or on the Harbour Bridge, and I put a big banner that says that fear is a liar.
Love it. Love it.
Because,
okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because it really is. Fear is not real. There's been movies that have kind of outlined it, and some have been successful, some haven't been successful, but the undercurrent theme of some movies is that fear isn't real. It's just something that we imagine. Danger is real, obviously, but fear is something that we conjure up in our mind for a future event that hasn't happened yet, and that we're worried that will happen. So what are we doing when we do that? We're giving energy to that fear, and eventually it'll come to fruition because that's our most intense feeling on the subject. So if I could put a banner anywhere, it would be on top of the Harbour Bridge, and it would be fear is a liar.
I think that's a nice way to end up this conversation, Barry. I really want to thank you for coming on this show, acknowledge you for all the amazing work you're doing, your book that's come out. I definitely recommend listeners get a hold of that. And I'm really excited to watch you in the coming months and years and what you achieve, and you know, really wish you all the best.
James, it's been a pleasure having you on. You're a sensational host, if I could say. and I think you'll do very, very well as well. Hopefully we can grow together.
Appreciate that. Now, just on your book, for listeners, where can they pick that up from?
Well, the first thing they can do is they can go to either my personal website, which is Barry Nicolaou, Nicolaou, .com. And what we've got for the next, I think it's the next 48 hours, we've got a free book offer, but it's a digital download. So what we ask is obviously a name and an email address, and you can get the book for free off my website. But if you're on Amazon, you can type in the 11 Master Secrets to Business Success, and it'll actually come up on Amazon as well. There's been a few five-star reviews there, which are great. And I think the physical copy will cost you about $25, and the digital copy on Amazon will be about $4 to $5 a minute.
Fantastic. Well, that's great, Daniel. Uh-huh. Thank you very much. And definitely look forward to our next chat for sure.
Absolutely, James. Thanks for your time.
So there you have it, folks. Episode 49 with Barry Nicolaou. I really hope you got a lot out of that. I know I absolutely did, and just sort of love the principles he brings to the table. I really agree with basically all the principles that he was discussing through there, and I think there's a lot that you guys can take away and really apply to your game. And you know, that's what we're all about. And you know, the discussion of our time is limited, and you don't really know where it's up. I know it's a bit of a cliche thing, but you really don't. And I think in those final moments, you would want to know that you're doing what you love that particular day. And that's what you need to sort of head towards. You need to make those changes and really start applying yourself on a daily basis. And these, you know, the big life changes don't happen overnight. They happen over months and years of progressing towards it, to doing the right finance side of things, to making things happen. And it doesn't happen overnight, but just start applying yourself and just, you know, taking that first little bite or that first step, and you'll be on your way. So guys, show notes, episode 49 is going to be on eliteteamleadership.com.au/EP 49. Links to Barry's stuff there, Barry's books, all that sort of stuff will be there, which is exciting. And also, guys, if you can jump on iTunes, give us our 5-star rating. That really helps us out. It really gets us going and keeps us getting these amazing guests on, and really sustains this whole thing. So if you guys can do that, that'd be super. But have a great week. Excited for next week's guest. And got us some really amazing ones coming up after that. So you're going to have to stay really tuned in. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast and keep checking it each week for the next big episode. So thank you. Get stuck in, and we'll speak to you soon.